Welcome, movie lovers, to another Anatomy of a Movie on the Popcorn Talk Network, where today, well, there are puppets of Muppets, and we get to talk Happy Time Murders. Are we happy? Tune in and find out.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Anatomy of a Movie.
That 70s vibe. Well, it must be another Anatomy of a Movie on the Popcorn Talk Networks. I'm Dimitri Panos, your host for today's Anatomy of a Movie. And alongside me, my awesomest, greatest co-host, who usually hosts, but she passed it off to me today, the wonderful, lovely Marissa Serafini.
Hello, Dimitri.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Not too shabby.
Welcome back.
Not too shabby.
We
welcome
didn't have
back.
You last week.
I know. Last week was a very busy week.
Sure,
you know, unfortunately, too, I still haven't seen that movie.
Oh, you need to go see Crazy
Rich I know. Well, it's a long weekend, so I have an extra day to get out to the movies. I did see a movie this week, the movie of which we're going to talk about, The Happy Time Murders, starring Melissa McCarthy and a lot of puppets. As we always start off, a couple of things you should note. We are very spoiler rich. We talk about the movie after it has opened, and we talk about plot points, the genre. We talk about the casting, the writing. So if you haven't seen the movie, we may give details away that you may not want to be given away.
Not may, we will.
Yeah. So we're just giving you that heads up. It has been said a couple of times that people actually do like to watch our show before seeing the movie. We welcome anyone and everyone who wants to watch Anatomy of a Movie, but we just want to put it out there that we are very spoiler rich. So on with the show. We always open the show with our thoughts and opinions on this movie. Marissa, you don't have strong thoughts or opinions on any movie, including this one.
I kid because I love, but... Right.
What did you think about that?
I had very strong thoughts about this film. Admittedly, I'm going to just be straight and honest and straightforward. I did not enjoy this film. I went into it thinking, well, it's definitely a comedy. It's definitely raunchy. And I went in knowing that I was like, okay, just... It's a world full of puppets. It's going to be ridiculous. I went in thinking that maybe at some moments it would be funny, and I was hoping to laugh, like, maybe twice. That I did not do. Just the storyline didn't feel original. The jokes didn't seem original. They're just raunchy. We've seen it in other raunchy films. None of this whole movie felt original by any means. And I think Melissa McCarthy, she's great. I've praised her acting, her abilities in all the movies that we've covered for her.
A fine comedian.
She's amazing.
Fine,
I love her.
Actress.
And she's a fellow Illinois native like me. But also, it's not out of her wheelhouse. I was expecting a lot from her. This movie just did not hit any good things for me.
So,
I really didn't enjoy it.
So you weren't happy with the happy
I was
time.
Not. This
you
movie was
happy.
More murderous for me than happy.
Would you say, to use my own phrase, it made you angry?
Yeah, it really angry. Did. I will be I don't want to say angry, but like I will be the opposing view.
It's okay.
Hey, on today's show.
It made me angry. You know, you're really not too, when you say opposing view, you're not necessarily an opposing view. I had some high expectations on this movie. The trailer to me looked funny, and it looked as if it was going to deliver something clever. Unfortunately, Happy Time Murders, for me, it never rose above the novelty. And like an overused party doll, it wore thin fast, like very fast. And it was a shame. That's where I was angry. Mm. It's not that I didn't like hate the movie. I hated the decisions that they made creatively because, you know, I think if they were bold, it's not even bold. I don't think they had the courage enough to make this a noir detective kind of a movie.
They tried. You can tell they tried.
They almost, but they decided to go another route. Like, had this been more of a period piece, had there been a style, like they completely abandoned style in this movie, where there was really nothing noir about it. And there were themes there. Themes of racism, themes of things that they could have gone on. I don't mind raunch, but this movie, it seemed a conscious decision to go for the raunch for being raunch. Other than, let's have it in this world. And they set it up actually quite, I thought they set it up quite hysterically at the beginning. This is our world. But then they just, they never rose above. And it definitely, a movie that I thought of a lot was Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Because when you think about that, that's another novelty movie where you're combining live action with animation, right? And it's a noir mystery story. But that movie was done with so much panache, and it had so much style, and the writing was so smart. You actually cared about these characters, where this movie could have been this generation's Roger Rabbit, but I'll tell you, it was no Roger Rabbit, and it for sure was no Great Muppet Caper. For sure. So,
right.
You know, in modern day, and again, I just felt, make this a noir movie. And I really blame, I think this is at the fault of the filmmakers on this one. I really do. There was no palette. Like, everything looked the same. To me, you know what? I'll even go this far, Marissa. Even though I liked it maybe a smidge more than you did, this could have been a prime STX Netflix deal. Like,
yeah, I would have been fine if it was released on Netflix. Therefore, I had the option to skip it.
Well, well, I'm just saying, from the point of you had this budgeted movie, like, STX could have made some money off of this, and they could have done one of those STX or Netflix deals. It didn't look like a movie to me. It looked cheap. Mm-hmm. It really looked cheap. And, you know, I don't want to discredit the creative work of the puppeteers. Look, I've watched puppeting types of things since Sesame Street. Big fan of the Muppets. I'm sure you were as well.
Yeah.
I'm sure you were as well. This movie was supposed to elevate this genre, show us something different. And boy, howdy, did it do that. But would you believe, Marissa, that this has been gestating? And this is the other thing, too.
Since for 15 years.
Yeah, like 2001.
It baffles me how people tried so hard to make this film. And like, and I get that the Muppets have been around since before I was born. You grew up with them. I grew up with them. So, like, the whole puppet world is not, you know, new. So, and it's fun for the adults now to think, like, let's take what we know and make it raunchy, make it satirical. Yeah, that's fine. But if it, well, my issue was that, like, they tried so hard, and the original script started really raunchy. They had to cut back to try to get a PG-13. They're like, no, you take away from the film.
Right.
Let's make it just a rated R. And this movie only had a Red Band trailer. I haven't seen a normal trailer. So you knew that this movie was going to be straight up R, all cursing, everything that makes it rated R. And that's fine, but none of the content was original.
Yeah, it was definitely missed opportunity.
Yes.
I would say, because again, you know, it fringes on, say, the porn industry a bit, you know, and again, I think back of movies like The Big Sleep, which didn't necessarily hinge on the porn business, but there were salacious pictures. Like, this was what prompted this mystery and the extortion going on here. So had they just taken the time, and I don't even mean that they had to make this movie black and white, right? But make it a period. Make the mystery like real story. Take it seriously. Mm-hmm. And that's why movies like Who Framed Roger Rabbit are taken seriously. Even The Great Muppet Caper. Like, all you right. care for these characters. I get it. It's kids. It's rated G. But still, they take their story seriously. And had you done that here and maybe focus less on throwing in some extra raunch, then you have a story that, even though the raunch, it becomes more accepted. Because I don't mind the puppets swear. And I've watched puppets since Sesame Street, since the Muppets, Mystery Science Theater 3000, where, again, we have puppets that are sarcastic, yet funny, you care. This movie, I didn't really care.
Yeah, and that was also my thing. It's like the main character, which we had, Bill Beretta, the puppeteer, but Phil, yeah. Phil Phillips, original name. Like, I didn't like him. I didn't like his personality. He was obviously a has-been who's bitter with the world and bitter with the characters and bitter with everyone that he interacts with. And there was really not one quality about this character. Granted, he's a Muppet, whatever, or like he's a puppet, you can say. A puppet. But if you're going to have him as a character to follow, the protagonist to follow, make him likable. And not once did I actually like him.
See, I actually liked the character.
And we had to follow him this entire film.
See, I actually liked him because he was acerbic. And again, I liked his acerbicness. I liked that he had this backstory of being ousted on the force. And again, he was a character that, even as the puppet, well, they refer to themselves as puppets. So even as the puppet, the main puppet character of our story, he too was like going, what am I seeing here? Could you shut the drapes, please? It's like, what the fuck? You know, and I like that sort of thing. There was a lot of, you know, he was always talking underneath his breath, which was sort of funny. The fact that they were smoking, look, from a technological side in these puppets, I thought they did a fun job. I like that character a little bit more than you did. But here's the thing that got me. Screenwriter Todd Berger, they conceived the story with D. Austin Robinson in 2001. I don't
17
know.
17 years ago now.
17 years ago, they came up with this story, right? And you want to know where they took their cues from? LA Confidential, Training Day, and they were big fans of Seven. None of that was in this movie. I mean, none of that was in this movie. And they would have made a better movie had they stuck to this, because yeah. Those are serious movies. And I don't mind making a satire, as you called, of the world. The movie Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid does a great job, pays great homage to the detective genre. This movie could have been that too. Like, I was thinking to myself going, wouldn't it be funny if all the puppets were like black and white, like a norm movie? Like, do something clever. And when you fall back on raunch for raunch's sake, and I think this is to your point, it's not clever. You know, it's for shock.
I think they were really banking on the raunch to save them.
Yes.
And then I think the problem with the jokes is that the raunchiness got old within the first 5 minutes.
It did.
And then when a storyline didn't seem like it was going anywhere, they would throw in a raunchy or over-the-top type of situation.
Right.
To be like, all right, let's break up the storyline with a ridiculous moment to get people laughing.
Right.
And then get back to the storyline. So even the formula didn't work.
But again, there are aspects of the movie, like when puppets got shot, instead of like a head splat, like it was just like the stuffing.
The fluff, right?
So I thought that was sort of funny. I also thought there was a scene with the puppets and the dogs were barking at them. I have a dog. I've stopped buying my dog stuffed animal dog toys because he now can tear them apart under 24 hours. It's a waste of money. So when the puppets are telling the dog going, I don't have that squeaky thing. I don't have that squeaky thing. I was laughing. I thought that was clever. There wasn't enough of that to carry through the movie. And to your point, I think they were scared. And they said, these things aren't clever enough. We're not clever to be clever. So let's shock. And it's too bad because, again, I think with more TLC in this movie, that's where I'm most angry. The potential was there to really make a movie for like, again, you wanted to keep it R. I'm all for it. I don't care.
Right.
But, you know, it's just funny that as an audience today, well, it didn't seem that audiences back, what did you say, 18 years ago? 17?
Yeah.
Like, they maybe had like a 17 very...
years ago now.
They had a very, very hard time selling this project from, like, just from the story concept, from, you know, they thought, like, you know, cursing puppets. And again, the Muppets have really never gone out of style. Let's be real.
And Sesame Street's still around.
Still around.
Like, we love the puppets and what they can do.
Yes. And, you know, but this was going to take it to another place. Brian Henson, Jim Henson's son, who's directed some Muppet movies and some Muppet things. And he does here in Southern California. He's produced a Muppet, like a puppet show. He's familiar with puppetry and getting mm-hmm. that done. So he was the director here. But, I mean, the writers were like trying to pass it along 18 years ago when people were saying, wait, you're going to have puppets swear and have sex and cursing? That's insane. And they also said, and you think you can make a puppet movie for under $1 million? We're going to talk about the budget because it was just a little over $1 million. I'm being sarcastic. So it took a better part of a decade where people like where Berger and director Jim Henson, they got together and they started to mold and fashion this script. I mean, to me, it's amazing that this has gestated for so long, right? I mean, it and to come out with what you came out with.
I mean, like, I get it if, like, if you think the whole storyline of racism / discrimination, that is still relevant no matter what decade we're in. It's definitely relevant now with a lot of things that are happening. There's a lot more acceptance of different communities and people and cultures and behaviors and stuff. So if you want to take, like, anything away from this film, they try to at least hit the theme of discrimination and we all have to, like, coexist with each other. Yeah, I get that. They definitely got that message across. But if that's, like, the only running theme of this film...
But wouldn't you have wanted that to be even further explored? Like, wouldn't... Like, again, good theme, right? Not a theme that you would necessarily expect out of like, a movie with puppets, right? Which makes it even... For me, anyways, that's the perfect opportunity because, in a sense, you're taking this... You're making a topic that you can play with, and you can do it in such a way that it resonates more. I see what they were going for, but it seemed so wafer thin to me. I wanted it more. Like, you could have done more, and you could have made a point, almost like science fiction, where you make society look in a mirror and go, wow, there's themes of racism going on over here.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there were racist cops or whatever. It could have been explored more.
It's also like, yes, we have to coexist with each other, but they didn't really, like you said, they didn't hit it as much as they could because the ending, when we know that Phillips, they like lifted the ban on puppet cops, right. You know, because what Phil did. But that still doesn't say that people aren't accepting of the puppet community.
Sure.
Like, they can have normal jobs like everybody else too. But that doesn't really touch upon, like, is everyone still okay with this? Zootopia. I'm going to throw out Zootopia.
Well, it's
did a great job.
No, that's a great example.
Did a great job of explaining how different races
absolutely
coexist with each other, and even at the end of that movie, people were very more accepting. And that really hit it.
And that was like
G
or PG.
Understood. Yeah, that was rated G. You understood why it's important to accept everybody else in different races.
Right.
This movie, I didn't feel like that problem was ever resolved.
No. And it was only, like I said, it was only like so threadbare. And it could have been something more to approach, especially if you're working on a script for 18 years. So, but there is another, you know, there's another movie too that I forgot about that dealt with puppets that was rated R, that was very raunchy, very funny, but still very good. People look at it today and they still laugh, which is Team America, World Police. Now,
Isn't that stop motion animation?
No, that was like marionettes. I actually haven't seen Tim and Mary, yeah, I mean, so I and there's from the creators of South Park. Hmm. And this movie has it all, and it has a funny story. Like, they should have paid more attention to things like that because it could have been done well. And, you know, I go back to, I feel bad for a lot of the creative folks behind it because we were talking about this. I think puppeteering is an art. I really do. Whether it's a ventriloquist act or whether it's puppeteering for Yoda, right? Mm-hmm. When you're able to bring life to a felt character, Kermit the Frog. Who doesn't love Kermit the Frog, right?
Right. Or even Elmo.
Elmo, you know? Right.
Like any, like I do have to applaud all the puppeteers. I mean, it takes a lot of work. It's mechanics, it's strength, it's skill. And it's a lot of dexterity. So like that, I'm not, you know, denying whatsoever. Like it does take a talent, a team of talented people to pull off as many puppets absolutely. As they did in this film.
And,
I'm not
and
discrediting that whatsoever.
Yeah,
but
I don't want to.
At least give them good content to do something.
I know, absolutely.
Skill.
But I want to, like, you had some information regarding the puppeteering, and I think it's important because people did put their best foot forward to make this work as puppeteers. And I think that anybody who's grown up, even if you're watching things like Muppet movies and things like, it was a marvel to see Kermit the Frog ride a bike and then go, where are the strings? Like, how are they doing this? Right.
Right. Right.
Yoda obviously is a beloved character. So, yeah. But
Elmo
so
was tapping. I'm going right. to keep going back to Elmo because Sesame Street was more.
What did you learn about the puppeteering regarding this movie?
I think it was interesting. I learned the whole snorting cocaine is an actual mechanic where they put a tubing up Melissa McCarthy's sleeve. You can't see it. It's obviously concealed. Right. But they put an actual tube pipe system up her sleeve, and it's like a vacuum that sucks up the powder.
Right.
Simple mechanic. You're like, oh, okay, now I know how puppets snort. Great. Other things like because they are puppets.
Right.
And people have to, they said the best performances from the actual puppeteer is when their arms are completely straight
right.
and locked, which means that the arms have to be raised above the head. So all the sets had to be raised
right.
a few feet. So even that, and we're human size, so when you have an actual tall puppeteer, it has to be taller than that.
Yes.
And that I actually never really thought of. Like that, all the sets, and especially when the puppets had to move or walk, everything had to be movable.
Elevated. And that,
I like that,
to their credit, I will say, that's where the movie magic worked because it didn't look that way at all. You know, interesting fact. So the Happy Time Murders is comprised of, catch this, more than 125 unique puppets. 125. Each was custom designed, painstakingly handmade by a team of talented puppet designers, many of whom have had award-winning backgrounds in puppet building, costume design, and sculpture. So all of these puppets in the Happy Time Murders, they were crafted by Jim Henson's Creature Shop. Not a surprise.
Yep. Like all the other puppets.
Like all of them, sure. Most of the characters built in the shop's New York location and Phil created in the Los Angeles location so that Brian Henson could guide the process. So that, to me, it's a lot of puppets. I mean, mm-hmm. I know that we talked, you brought up Zootopia, right? We in Zootopia, I know one of the things we talked about is how many leaves on a tree, right?
Oh, yeah. So, or how many furs on just one creature.
Right. So in here, we're actually creating something physical, tangible. And that's one thing about the puppets that you have to say. I mean, they did, there was a physicality, tangibleness to them that they weren't CG'd.
They do look like different. I mean, yes, they're different puppets, but it is also realistic that they did have different shapes and sizes and genders, because that is what the human race is. We don't look alike. We all do look different. So it makes sense that the puppets would look different.
And I'm glad you said that, because there another line I felt was clever was when Phil's brother, who is one of the cast members of this Happy Time Murder, he goes, when did you get the human nose? Like, he switched from his puppet nose to a human nose.
And
I'm like,
bleached.
Going, yeah,
quote, unquote, he bleached his skin to look a lighter blue.
I thought, again, those are the nuggets that I'm like going, these are things that are very funny that, you know, we should go on. Just going back to the pre-production and things, do you know that each puppet began with simple line drawings? So Henson would approve it. And then once approved, the drawing is blown up to actual size of the puppet. And then a 3D foam mock-up is made with attention such as details, color, all of the skin texture. That's a lot of work. Yeah. And again, they're not, it's all creating something new. They did make it a point that this was not the street being Sesame Street. So they were creating brand new characters. And if it's 125 that you have to create, stitch, mold, sew, put together, levers and all that, that's a lot of work. So, you know, then, as you were saying, the creature shop team also made 7 clodhoppers. They called them clodhoppers. So they're 3.5 to 4 feet tall, full body puppets. Now, see, that's the thing, too. There were times I'm watching, like, Phil Phillips, like, cross the street or something. I'm like going, that's a guy in a costume.
That's a human.
It never was. It was like these clodhoppers. And I was like, that's crazy to me because you sort of, the illusion works.
Yeah. and also going along the Phil puppet that they created 6 different Phil puppets to get that had different functionalities. That like there was some for an underwater scene for Phil and another one where he gets wet because some puppets soak up with water. Right. So they actually built a lot of different types for Phil so he can do a lot of different situations.
Yeah, and apparently a puppeteer credo is, if you're comfortable when you're puppeteering, then you're doing something wrong. meaning they must contort, stretch, manipulate their bodies into multiple positions to get the right angles, allowing the camera to get the shot, and they must do it without forgetting a line of dialogue or missing a beat of their performance. Now, you said, you mentioned this scene, you mentioned water, and that's the scene that the hot tub. Mm-hmm. And that's crazy because that scene was actually one of the hardest to film because as you explained, so you have this hot tub and that's raised and you have a puppeteer underneath who really can't see and he's got a rubber glove who's manipulating a puppet and trying to get the line of dialogue as he's underneath a hot tub.
In water.
So that to me, I find, again, I wish the movie were better because the art of puppeteering shouldn't be lost. You know, like, look, if this movie, guess what I'm getting at too? Like, if the movie were far better received, if it was a far better movie, right? Everybody would be talking about how, would be talking about the artistry of puppetry. Everybody would be, because you'd go, wow, what a great movie. And it didn't turn out to be such a great movie, and nobody's talking about the artistry of puppetry. So I want to do that on this show, because I grew up watching puppets, and those puppeteers should be given credit for the hard work they did.
Yeah, and sometimes it wasn't just one person. A lot of times,
oh my God,
the majority of times, it was like 2 or 3 people just using the mechanics for one.
Absolutely.
So you have to imagine with all the puppets that they had,
yeah,
for a lot of people on set actually doing the movements of an arm. Like one person would be like directing the left arm, then another person's directing the right arm to do a lot of different things. So you have to applaud all of them because they were all clad in green, so they can obviously be keyed out. But you don't realize how many, literally how many hands it takes just to puppeteer one.
No. So let's talk a little bit about, let's talk Melissa McCarthy. We'll talk a little bit about the cast that was in this, the human cast. The last I can recall seeing Melissa McCarthy was in a movie that we reviewed here and talked about and dissected here in Anatomy of a Movie, Life of the Party, I believe the movie, right?
Yes.
That was the movie that she and her husband, Ben Falcone, co-wrote, he directed. You know, I remember not really loving that movie, but
I like
but
that I movie it. More than this one.
You took the words right out of my mouth and my tongue didn't feel a thing. I felt the same way. And it's like we said at the top of the show, she's such a gifted, talented comedian. And when she's worked movies like Heat, Spy, Bridesmaids, she's funny. She
Gilmore
is funny.
Girls.
Yeah, Gilmore Girls. Like, she is funny, right?
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, her and her husband took an active role in accepting. Like, she had gotten the script.
Loved it within two pages. Reading it.
Went to her husband, said, I think I'm going to do this movie. He goes, read it some more. 4 or 5 pages later, I'm going to do this movie. And, yeah, and I believe he has a cameo, if I'm correct.
He does.
Right?
When her character walks out. And when Connie walks out and she's like, you're the guy I should have effed.
Yeah.
Instead, it was actually Ben Falcone, her husband. He still can. I like that. But as funny as that line was, it took me out of the film because I know who Ben Falcone is. So it was kind of just for the people who do know the inside joke, it's funny.
So. Now, the audience that I saw that with, I'm not entirely sure that they saw the inside joke because he was like, he looked different.
He put a mustache on him. I don't know if it was a real mustache.
The audience I saw it with, they genuinely laughed at that scene. Like, genuinely laughed at that scene. I thought it was a funny scene, especially when he goes, you still can. So it was probably one of the more better directed comedic beats. I think of that film.
And I feel like that line was actually an improvised line from Melissa McCarthy.
Yeah.
That stayed in the film.
I don't disagree with you. Rumor has it that Melissa and Ben also took passes at the script as well.
Yeah, Melissa took a pass for the character because her character, Connie, was actually originally a man.
Yeah.
And but when Melissa went through the script, it's not like they changed the behavior, so to speak, of the character. She just kind of made it her own. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of the lines were also raunchy, ridiculous, that I think any gender could say, and it would, quote-unquote, be funny. When they were writing out the story and the script and Melissa got involved, it kind of just changed into, it makes more sense if she was also... If she was an alpha female,
right,
paired with an alpha male cop instead of two alpha males,
yeah,
because we've seen that formula so many times.
Sure,
Lethal Weapon and Die Hard and name whatever buddy buddy cop film. So that again, that's not an old.
No, that's not a new thing.
That's old.
It's a buddy cop movie trope, and if anyone's going to carry it off. Again, Melissa McCarthy with her acerbicness, she can. And I'm not saying she didn't have some funny lines. Again, I think I may have laughed at the movie a little bit more than you did. She was funny, but it was, I'd have rather seen her in a sequel to Heat if you're going to play a cop. Like, because she, or the Heat. She was so good in that movie paired with Sandra Bullock, but she was great. And I believed her. She was 100 times funnier in that movie than she was utilized in this movie.
And the good thing about Heat was there's a lot of slapstick comedy in that film. They didn't rely so much on the raunch. They relied on situational comedy, the sitcom part of it. And that's why, you've heard me on past Anatomies, I'm a sucker for slapstick. There really wasn't a lot of slapstick in this movie other than blowing up puppets via shotgun and fluff flying everywhere.
Yeah, and a lot of squirting, for lack of better
gratuitous
words.
Sex.
So, but again, just going back to Heat, had you even made it similar to that, add in some more situation, like you could have had. There are so many templates to have used. And I think they were afraid to make this noir. Because another thing about noir is color palette of your location, right? Because nor, right, lighting, nor should have an undercurrent of darkness, whatever.
Yeah.
Everything in this movie looked the same. And this I noticed from beginning to end. Everything looked the same. There was no threat. There was no, we had the rain. But
maybe the shootout in the alley was like the closest thing they tried to get to Noor.
Yeah.
But I agree that because this is rated as, or like it's categorized as a comedy, there's a lot of light, heavy lighting to light it up, to make it lighter.
I guess, but I laughed a lot at Who Framed Roger Rabbit. But Robert Zemeckis is a very talented director. Okay, I'm not making a comparison from him to Henson here. I'm just saying they took the time to set up the world, the noir world of the 40s. I forget right now what year Who Framed Roger Rabbit, what year it took place. But that's the thing: if you create a world and it's essentially a period piece, if your story is good, you don't care what period the movie's in. So they could have done it modern day had they wanted, but why? Since it's Phil Phillips as opposed to Philip Marlowe, and since it is his overvoice, which is a common trope in these kind of noir detective movies, make it more of that. Play off of that world. And in the puppet world, I would just figure you can do so much more, almost like an animation. But they seem to be restricted by their own, I don't know, they just seem to be afraid to take a risk to do that. Maybe they thought they would lose audience. So let's go for shock value. That'll bring them in. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And to not to keep hitting, beating a dead horse, but it seems like they tried to go noir, mm-hmm. and like they pulled some themes, some elements from noir, but not fully went there because if you go too serious, then it's fully noir. It's dramatic. And then that plays with the different genres of this film because it's supposed to be funny. We don't laugh at noirs.
But there generally have been noirs that have paid homage to noirs. Like I said, Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid. You can make that kind of a movie and just turn it on its heels. Just be a little more creative. I will say Maya Rudolph. You know, she's always a pleasure. She
Bubbles.
Works. Bubbles. I mean.
And we know Melissa McCarthy Bubbles. And Maya Rudolph are work together. Like best friends in real life. So if you see one, the other one's not too right. far behind. I liked her. She was funny. She didn't have like any character flaws. I didn't like. She coexisted with all the puppets and she was very accepting. Also a good backup to Phil.
Yeah.
And a great backup to Connie, especially when they were doing their recon.
Sure.
And she added some comedy of her own.
Of her own. And here's the thing, again, too, when you watch a detective movie, like The Big Sleep, right? Or, you know, a good detective has a good receptionist. And there's something there. There's a chemistry there, right? And if you're not going to go that period piece, then why are you having her dress as if she walked out of a 40s movie? Like, I mean, that's what she was playing. So just go full period and just do it because she fit in. She looked great in the role. She was fun to look at. And I found that of all the characters, she was the one that I was like, when she came on screen, I zeroed in on her because she just looked, she looked vivacious. She looked vibrant and she had this innocence about her. Mm-hmm. I liked her. I liked Maya Rudolph. I'm going to switch a little bit. Elizabeth Banks was in this movie, who I didn't know was in this movie.
Yeah, I didn't realize she was going to be in this film.
I like Elizabeth Banks. She's a very funny comedian.
I didn't like her character. Nope. Especially how they built her up to be somewhat of a good person. The former ex-lover of Phil. So yep. Like you're rooting for her, and then obviously there's the twist with her character. She's actually in on it. But when she had an explosion in the car, I didn't feel for her. I was like, oh, goodbye, Elizabeth. Thanks.
I just
Sorry.
Knew she was. I knew. I just.
I thought that was also too simple.
Yeah.
So when there was the twist with her character that she was in on the whole ruse, I was like, yeah, okay, but I still don't care about you either. Anyways. But, like, my opinion of her never changed.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Very indifferent. And again, I think it's a waste. It's wasted talent.
That's just, that was poor character development.
Yeah.
And that's not a knack on Elizabeth Banks whatsoever.
No, I think it's wasted talent. I mean, and you could have almost gotten anybody in there. And in this kind of a movie, too, so the car blows up. And then she comes back at the end. There's usually She's not dead. She comes back. There's usually some explanation, like, how did our detective miss that? What was the sleight of hand that she got out of the car? Never explained. She's just, oh, okay, whatever. At that point, you just, you don't care anyways. But I'm bringing it up because it's something that usually is somewhat explained. Like, how did they pull one over on our hero detective? We never got that. And then we had Joel McHale.
Never actually saw her get carted off. She got knocked out and that was That was it.
Yeah, that's true.
I'd hope they catch her.
You know, and Joel McHale was in this movie.
He's great at playing a dick.
Yeah.
This isn't the first role that he's played an a-hole. I didn't like him either. And of course, they only had him to play opposite against Phil.
Right.
To make Phil look like the better cop. Or the or the better, you know, law enforcer. And Joel was just the common a-hole. He's like, oh, great, now I have to deal with you.
Yeah. And I just felt, I couldn't say whether or not he added anything to the, like, and again, it wasn't his fault. You know, he too can deliver a line. He is able to be a good comedic actor. We know this. It's almost like they could have pulled anybody to play this role and be the dick character.
Yeah.
So, which I felt bad for. Now, I know that you didn't like Bill Beretta as the character of Phil Phillips, who happens to also be a puppeteer.
Bill's fine. I have no problem against Bill.
But
it's just the...
go ahead.
The character of Phil, he's angry, he's bitter. We know eventually they're going to show a soft side. He's eventually going to let down his guard and finally partner up with Connie.
Right.
You know, Melissa McCarthy's character. But we just from other movies and television and stuff, we know that there was hopefully a character arc.
Right.
But not once did I ever really like him. His personality, and I didn't want to follow him as the main protagonist.
Yeah. See, where I did like him as a character. I liked the way he was performed, particularly the way he was voiced. Bill's voice had that gruff. And I love the inner voice that, like, oh God, just shut up. And the could you shut the curtains, please? Please, I don't need to see that. You know, he's even in this world that he doesn't even want to see what's going on around him too. So I don't know. I did enjoy his performance. I liked the character a little bit more than you did. But you know, Marissa.
But I don't need to see Phil having gratuitous sex with Sandra, that puppet. That was too much. That was way too much.
I don't mind, but it was so obviously. It came at a point in the movie that it was just there to be there.
Yeah, like, it was so just unnecessary.
There to be there. That's what bothered me. Like, see, what I found the opening, like one of the opening scenes, when Phillips walked into the pornography place and there was the cow and the octopus. I'm like going, okay, that's very clever. And his lines were very funny. And then he's like, could you shut that, please? It's very distracting. I need to talk to you. I was like, okay, somebody did something really, like, to me, that was clever raunch. The scene we were talking about in the office, like, it was just there. It was, I don't know, it was shock to shock. And with everything else in that movie, and again, be more clever. So, you know, the thing of it is, too, is that this movie came in at a budget of $40 million.
Ugh.
That's high. That's high.
That's a very high film.
For this movie.
What we only saw in this movie. There wasn't a lot of visual effects because it was all practical.
So
I'm just wondering, how the hell did they spend all the $40 million?
I know it's puppets. And then I go back to our good friends Blumhouse, because they can make a movie for $3 million.
Yeah.
Not always using some practical effects.
And with better and story.
And make it look really good. And I looked, and I said, $40 million? I go, if you're $40 million in your production budget, that means you're, at the very least, $80 million all in. Hard drives, advertising, whatever promotion you put into this, you are correct. They only came out with, like, that Red Band trailer, so they didn't make multiple versions
of
that.
Not a lot of promotion.
So, you had that, and I'm telling you, it just, I was a little bit shocked. Now, the other thing is when we talk about $40 million, well, box office wise,
it's not making that.
Yeah, but well, it opened up last week. It opened up on about 3,000, just a little over 3,000 locations. So it's like 3,200.
That's a wide release. That's a high wide release.
It's a wide release from theaters. A studio STX. Now it's a lot of locations throughout the country. Didn't have a foreign release as of yet, and it came in at number three, and it didn't even crack 10 million. It did 9.5.
Yeah,
and it came in number three behind holdover movies, Crazy Rich Asians. Mm-hmm.
And with this particular opening, it's actually, not to sound terrible, it's the lowest per screen average opening Melissa McCarthy has had in her career.
It's the lowest that she's had. That was a wide release.
That's awful. Yeah. That's not good. No. Because she's a great actress. And, like, I hate to compare box office numbers to her past projects, but that's not promising either.
No, it doesn't bode well. It dings her career a little bit. I mean, I still think that people will gravitate towards Melissa McCarthy, especially if there's a movie and a project where the trailer showcases this is the movie that we want to see her in. So, we want to see her in a sequel to Spy. Oh, that would be great, right? I'd totally be down for that. But the other thing, Marissa, is we are not alone. You're not alone. We're not alone as far as, well, for Rotten Tomatoes, it was at 22% when I last checked.
Very low.
That's pretty low. The only other movie that it was at 22% was Mile 22. Right? So, but here's the thing that really surprised me. I'm going to tell you why it surprised me. Did you see it in a crowded theater?
Not really, no.
I did. I saw it at a crowded theater Wednesday evening. And by crowded, I'm going to say it was about 80% full.
I'd say mine was maybe like 10 people.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is pretty low.
The audience I saw with laughed more than I did. And they laughed from beginning. They laughed throughout the entire movie. I think there might have been some people who didn't quite realize what they were walking into. I think I saw a walkout. But other than that, everybody stayed in. So I was thinking, okay, audiences are sort of liking the movie. And then I looked on CinemaScore and I saw C-.
C. That's not good.
No. I mean, that's like a grade up above a D.
It is. You're right.
And audiences, according to CinemaScore, really didn't like this movie as much as the audience that I saw it with. I guess I'm not surprised. I don't think people, I don't know, maybe people didn't know what they were walking into.
I've read stories where parents have actually brought their children into the theater to see this movie thinking that they were going to get a Sesame Street
type of film.
Like, oh boy, you're bad. You're a bad parent. Sorry.
You really. Like,
do a little bit more research before knowing what kind of film you bring your children to.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just called common sense. And I'm not a parent.
I mean, so. It's rated R. Just because it has puppets. You know, it's
right.
You know,
and literally the tag title says "No Sesame, All Street,"
yeah.
Which they actually got a lot of controversy.
Yeah.
And they got sued. STX got sued.
Yeah.
By Sesame Street, yep. Saying it was derogatory to their to like their brand and their content, and they actually Sesame Street lost and STX won.
Yep.
Which is very surprising.
Yeah, you know, and the thing, you know, the other thing that really sucks about this too is, imagine had they made a good movie, right? Because again, to me, this brings something different to the moviegoers' world, right? Something different, could have been something fun. We could maybe see more movies, like, had it been done well. And I'm all for it, because you are seeing something that we're not akin to seeing. And again, I don't mind the puppet world at all. I don't mind that you're going rated R. Like, why not? It's clever. Do it. Do it right. But I think this movie, unfortunately, is going to kill that notion. You know, I really do. And I hope, I don't think it will. I don't think it hurts the Sesame Street brand. I don't think it hurts the Muppet brand at all. Because people aren't going to, they're going to discard this so easily that now is the time to make a good Muppet movie. To have another Muppet movie.
Yeah, because like the our generation now kind of needs it. Because I mean, we have a lot, or like the younger generation also need it slash want it, because we covered the Muppet movie that came out a few years ago, Tina Fey and all that.
Yeah.
We know that they can make good films with better content, with a
Jason
better story.
Siegel and Amy Blunt. Adams. Yeah. And it was just so
it was great.
Fun. And again, it can be done. And I'm going to go as far back. I brought up the Great Muppet Caper, because that, in essence, is a detective. I know it's a little more Sherlock Holmes-ish from what I...
But
it was a fun...
It's a good story. It's a good story.
It's a good story.
Like, the concepts there, it's just about the execution.
Absolutely.
This movie did not execute.
No.
I mean, they executed. They murdered it. They killed their own film.
Yeah. And it...
Yes.
I'm still laughing because I've...
See, I'm already... I'm more funny than this film is.
In all the years... that we've been doing this together. Yes, I can count on one hand and probably just use one of my digits to say how much Marissa has hated a movie. And this one, of all our years together, this movie, I'm going to say it is your most hated movie in our entire existence as Anatomy of a Movie.
It definitely moved its way up there. Not that I'm proud of it whatsoever, but it's more so I wanted to go in with a good laugh. I knew it was going to be raunchy. I knew the concept was going to be ridiculous, but at least make me laugh. At least make me enjoy it.
That's the way
that
I
did not.
A bad comedy.
Like, I actually had kind of low expectations for this film, but it didn't even hit that.
Okay, on the spot. So, Happy Time Murders, A Mother. Which one did you hate more?
Oh, goodness. Don't compare those two.
Happy Time Murders or Mother? Which one? Because right now, after hearing you talk, I'm going Happy Time Murders edges it out just by a smidge.
I don't know. I think they're kind of on par.
They could be.
Good Lord.
Just wanted to throw that out there. Because, we have... You can watch our dissection of Mother.
See, I probably have to put Mother over this movie.
Oh, you do?
Only for the post-fact of knowing the allegory of the
Correct.
Story.
Okay.
Like, there was more thought into the concept of Mother than this movie had.
Yeah, I'll give... There was a little more creativeness.
I'll give Aronofsky that.
Mother, there you go. You're a little less hated than Happy Time
Murders. Both of these movies were low on this. Yeah,
they're not good movies. Look, this is not a good movie. I'm not defending it. It didn't make me angry. I was more angry at the choices that they made. There was potential here, and sometimes that's tragic. When there's potential.
The execution fell flat.
It was bad. It was bad. So, I think we should just wrap up. I think we've solved the mystery of Happy Time Murders here.
I think so.
We're done, right? It's a wrap.
Yep.
So we're good to go. Marissa. How can people support you on social media? Where can they find you?
Everyone can follow me everywhere at Serafini TV, Twitter, all that fun stuff. At Serafini TV. You can follow all of us here at the Popcorn Talk, our particular show at Movie Anatomy, and all those fun social media platforms.
Great. And me, you can please support me on Twitter at DMovies1701. You can find me here on Popcorn Talks Anatomy of a Movie. Also, I'm on Popcorn Talks Meet the Movie Press, where we just talk about the biz and what's going on. So tune in often. We still have, we're going into fall. Summer's almost over here, right? We got fall. We have movies like Searching. We'll have movies like The Predator. We will have...
and we even have movies in our past, like The Muppets.
Yes, we have The Muppets.
Like Zootopia.
Absolutely. Even Mother.
We have a lineup.
You know what, Phil? Speaking of our catalog, the movie Annihilation, I know... 7,000 views on Annihilation. You believe it? We're 7,000.
We go all over
on a movie that really wasn't that good either. 7,000 views. We're big, folks. We're big. You just don't know it yet. In any case, please tune into us next week, where we will be searching for Searching.
There you go.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us today. Have a great day, weekend. Just enjoy yourselves and keep on going to the movies.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. Sympathy.